U.S. intelligence officials say North Korea has carried out a cyber attack in this country. The target was Sony Pictures, which, as we've reported, was working on a comedy called The Interview about an attempt to assassinate North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. Now Sony has announced it is pulling that movie from the box office. It was supposed to debut on Christmas Day, but that is not going to happen now. Let's bring in NPR's tech reporter, Arthi Shahani, who's on the line. Arthi, good morning to you.
Good morning.
So we've heard about this hack against Sony. I mean, they got everything from social security numbers to embarrassing emails. And now let's be careful. What exactly are intelligence officials telling NPR? They're using this term that North Korea was centrally involved?
Yeah, I mean, in a sense, it's the confirmation that many people have been waiting for, though it's also really important to note that we don't exactly know what it means. And I have spoken with security experts who are skeptical about just how involved North Korea was. Now, that said, if it's true, it really is extraordinary. North Korea is one of the poorest countries on Earth. Its people don't go online. They're cut off from the internet. But its government has allegedly launched an overt cyber attack and even secured a decisive victory against one of the biggest companies on Earth.
What do you mean by overt cyber attack?
Well, that's a key part here, the fact that you and I and everyone else knows about it. I want to compare this with another cyber attack, one that was carried out by nation-state actors in 2010. It's called Stuxnet. That's when the U.S. and Israel used some very sophisticated code to dig their way into nuclear facilities in Iran and damage actual centrifuges used to enrich uranium. In that case, the hackers caused physical damage in the real world, but they did it covertly. While the news eventually broke, it's not like the U.S. was sending out press releases. In this case, the hackers, who might be North Korean officials or backed by the regime, have been very vocal from the get. Using the name Guardians of Peace, they've even threatened to hurt people who go and see the movie in theaters.
Well, and those threats have led to something pretty extraordinary. I mean, for this massive company, Sony, deciding to pull a movie from the box office.
That's right. I mean, theater chains that were supposed to screen The Interview decided not to, and Sony canceled the Christmas Day release. So effectively, the hackers grabbed a ton of attention through an online attack, and one, by the way, that was nowhere near as sophisticated as Stuxnet, and they leveraged all that attention, that power, to pivot and make a physical threat that people suddenly felt was credible. Now, this whole chain of events has experts inside the cybersecurity industry really concerned. I talked to a few people whose job it is to ward off these kinds of attacks, and they have different takes on whether Sony, by caving, made the right decision for itself. But, you know, across the board, they're worried that the company is sending the wrong message by handing off a huge win to a disgruntled state with very limited resources.
All right, just a crazy story. We've been speaking about it with NPR's Arthi Shahani in San Francisco. Arthi, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
The White House is considering what it calls a proportional response to the cyber attack on Sony Pictures. Intelligence officials have privately said that North Korea is behind the hack. Today, White House spokesman Josh Earnest stopped short of naming North Korea, but he added,
"This is something that's being treated as a serious national security matter. There is evidence to indicate that we have seen destructive activity with malicious intent that was initiated by a sophisticated actor."
It's believed the attack is retaliation for Sony's movie The Interview. It's a comedy in which a couple of journalists are asked by the CIA to assassinate North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. We'll hear about the cost of Sony's decision to cancel the movie's theatrical release just ahead. But first, what's known about North Korea's ability to launch cyber attacks? I put that question to James Lewis. He's with the Center for Strategic and International Studies, specializing in international security in cyberspace.
North Korea has been building a cyber attack capability for more than a decade, and the current leader's father put a lot of money into building an IT industry, people who knew about software. It's part of their intelligence agency. There's probably several thousand North Korean government employees who practice hacking every day, and they've gotten better every year. They've gone out of their way to learn new techniques, acquire tools from the black market, and they practice against South Korea on a regular basis. So the amazing thing about this attack is not only the duration and the vindictiveness, but the improvement in North Korean capabilities that we've seen.
And in the past, what have been the motives of North Korea's hacks? When you mentioned they've been practicing on South Korea, what have they been trying to do?
They follow a political agenda. And so sometimes people get confused and they call it cyber war. This is not warfare. This is politics. The North Koreans are very touchy about their leaders. And if the South Koreans say something that offends them, but they've gone after banks, television stations, newspapers, government agencies. It's part of a larger political campaign to either soften up the South Koreans in preparation for talks or to make a political point or to defend their leader's reputation.
This is obviously a different thing, a blurrier line, right? A foreign attack not on U.S. infrastructure or the U.S. government, but a private company, Sony Pictures, a Japanese company based in the United States.
One of the things that we've seen develop over the last couple of years is that a number of these countries, like Russia, Iran, Syria, and now North Korea, have figured out that they can use cyber attack as a political tool to manipulate public opinion, to damage their opponents. And so what's interesting is the North Koreans, who've done this four or five times against the South in the last 2 years, felt bold enough to do it against an American target. And some of that has to do with the subject of the film. This is sacrilege in North Korea to portray the assassination of their leader who has a godlike status. And that was apparently enough to send them over the edge and have them go against Sony. So I think we can expect to see things like this in the future.
What do you think the broader implications of this are? I mean, what does it say if North Korea did engineer this hack and then through these threats forced a huge company to capitulate? Where does this go?
We've sort of seen this coming for a while. The FBI said last year they notified 3,000 American companies that they had been hacked. It's incredible. And this is the most dramatic in some ways because it wasn't done for commercial motives. It was done for political reasons. And we have not built nationally the defenses we need to protect ourselves. We don't have international agreement on what is stability in cyberspace, although the administration has done a pretty good job of trying to get that. We're not in a place where we can say, this is an infrastructure we depend on and it's safe to use. It's not safe to use. And this is what I do, and I've done it ever since I worked for the government. We used to call it the New York Times test. When I write an email, I ask myself, how would I feel if this email appeared on the front page of the New York Times? Company executives need to start thinking that, and they need to maybe put a little more attention into cybersecurity than they have in the past.
Beyond companies, though, you're talking about national defenses. You're formerly with the State and Commerce Departments. What do you think the U.S. response should be or will be?
So no country has good cyber defenses. I guess that should make us feel a little better. But recently, the administration has launched an initiative to improve critical infrastructure protection, coming up with a cybersecurity framework. Our problem is we just move really, really slow. So the cybersecurity framework will take years to implement. We don't have a good way to track whether it's working or not or who's actually doing it. So we've kind of done this in a haphazard fashion, and people have just underestimated the risks we face. There's a whole debate. We don't want to be regulated. I get that. But maybe when it comes to national security, we're going to have to think about how we do this in a better way.
James Lewis directs the Strategic Technologies Program with the Center for Strategic and International Studies here in Washington. Mr. Lewis, thanks.
Thanks very much.
And this deal between the U.S. and Cuba to reinstate diplomatic relations could be the beginning of a new revolution on the island, a digital revolution. According to the White House, only 5% of Cubans have access to the open Internet. As part of this deal, that could change quickly. NPR's Arthi Shahani reports.
Maribel Fonseca is a professional, a teacher, and she says she has never visited the Internet.
No conozco.
She doesn't know it. She's in Miramar, Cuba, and we're speaking over a miserable and very expensive phone connection. A few of her students have been online. She says, I work in a school where members of the military and foreigners and top people in the country are. They use it. They go shopping. They see things I haven't seen. What she wants to see most is her family. Fonseca's sister has been in the U.S. for more than a decade. Her voice lights up at the idea of video chatting together. She says, of course. I can guarantee if I could have internet at home, I'd talk to my sister every single day. I wouldn't miss a minute of her life. I love her so much. Miami Cuban Ideal Oscari says students back home ask people abroad like her for the latest research papers and even for local news. State-owned media doesn't report reliably on crime or corruption. Underground bloggers leak stuff out.
Sometimes I have actually found out things that are happening in Cuba before some of my family members have.
Cuba has just one government-controlled telecommunications company. This week's announcement could mark the end of that monopoly and pave the way for competition and growth, capitalism style.
I don't know that the Castros are ready for an information revolution, but they're a couple old men.
Alec Ross was a senior advisor on tech issues in the U.S. Department of State.
They're going to die sooner than later, and I think that they're trying to salvage something.
Ross says Cuba won't just light up with bandwidth. The government has to start a bidding process. Mobile operators, presumably foreign-owned, will buy leases and build networks, putting in hundreds of millions of dollars in capital. That's step one.
Step two is determining and seeing whether, once Cubans actually go online, are they allowed free expression, or is the internet more like it is in Iran?
It's a hot question, though, interestingly, it's also somewhat peripheral. In plenty of countries, Ross says, government control has a chilling effect on online speech. But if a wireless signal is there, citizens will use it.
They just often aren't talking about politics in ways that would anger their central governments.
U.S. tech companies like Google, Facebook, and Cisco are watching how commercial policy shapes up. Telecom giants Verizon and AT&T have not stated publicly if they're going to bid for the Cuba contract. Kent Engomanson with the European telecom operator Telenor says these companies can play a huge role in keeping the internet free. If and when a government asks for a secret surveillance deal, they can say no.
You have your relationship with your customers, and that is built on the trust that you have with them.
Engomanson says he's happy for Cuba, and the internet is a human right. Aarti Shahani, NPR News.
Widespread internet use is sure to bring Cuba benefits, but also headaches. Just ask Sony Pictures. It has suffered massively from a hack attack that U.S. intelligence blames on North Korea. That attack appears to be in retaliation for Sony's new and now unreleased comedy about the assassination of North Korea's leader. Steve Henn covers technology for NPR's Planet Money team and brings us more on this still unfolding drama. Good morning.
Good morning.
How does the administration know that North Korea was behind this attack?
Well, that's a really good question, and sometimes these attacks are hard to track down. So I've spoken to cybersecurity experts whose job it is actually to track attacks like this, and they say there were a number of clues. A proxy server used in this attack has been used by North Korea in the past. There were some unusual techniques that they've seen North Korean hackers use as well. There were Korean language artifacts in the code, and the attack itself was compiled using a computer set for Korean. Now, there are still some skeptics out there who say these clues could be false flags, but the totality of the evidence seems pretty strong, and most people I've talked to say that it probably is the North Koreans.
Well, the White House clearly believes this. At least a spokesman said the president considers this attack a, quote, serious national security matter, adding that the response needed to be, quote, proportional. What, though, does that mean when we're talking about an attack on a private company, a movie studio?
Right. You know, that's a really difficult question to answer, and it's clear policymakers are struggling with this. I mean, obviously, the U.S. military has said a cyber attack could be an act of war. I mean, clearly an attack on, say, military command and control systems would be. But, you know, hacking into a movie studio isn't that. And attacks like this are becoming more common. In 2012, there was an attack on a Saudi Arabian oil company. Earlier this year, Iranian hackers allegedly attacked the Sands Casino, apparently in response to remarks made by that company's majority owner, Sheldon Adelson, who was talking about dropping bombs in the Iranian desert. And now you have the North Korean government allegedly striking out because of a movie, you know, a comedy that it didn't find funny. And what I think is so fascinating about those last two examples is that here you have nation states allegedly using hackers to reach across international borders and punish private speech they don't like.
Well, Steve, in Sony's case, that seems to have actually worked because they canceled the release of their movie, The Interview.
Well, that's true. And clearly companies need to do better. And if a CEO isn't thinking about this stuff after the year we've had, they probably should be fired. You know, one of the fascinating things about the data that leaked out of Sony is that a lot of it makes it clear that Sony really wasn't taking its security very seriously. They didn't have any effective way to prevent all of these movies and films and emails from being removed from their network or even noticing that it was going on.
So what are Sony's options now?
Well, you know, if the entire goal of computer security is to increase the cost of a successful hack or reduce the benefit, Sony actually does have one thing it could do. It could release this film, The Interview, online. I mean, if this hack was designed to prevent people from seeing the film, you know, releasing it online defeats that, and the hack itself has given Sony hundreds of millions of dollars in free publicity.
Steve Henn covers technology for NPR's Planet Money. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
When President Obama held his year-end news conference today, cybersecurity jumped to the top of the agenda, a result of the recent cyber attack on Sony Pictures.
If we don't put in place the kind of architecture that can prevent these attacks from taking place, this is not just going to be affecting movies. This is going to be affecting our entire economy in ways that are extraordinarily significant.
The president said that North Korea is responsible for the attack. He also had tough words for Sony Pictures, something we'll ask the company's CEO about in just a few minutes. First, NPR's Aarti Shahani has more on the evidence in this case and the prospects that the U.S. might respond.
President Obama says the U.S. cannot ignore the attack against Sony by North Korea.
They caused a lot of damage, and we will respond. We will respond proportionally, and we'll respond in a place and time and manner that we choose.
Asked if the proportional response could include a physical attack or hacking back, the president declined to comment. Earlier today, the FBI laid out its rationale for attributing the attack to North Korea. The FBI knows that North Korea had previously used the malicious software or malware employed by hackers to delete Sony data. That malware could also be traced back to unique computer addresses in North Korea. And finally, the attack resembles one in March of 2013 against South Korean banks and media outlets, which the FBI says was also carried out by North Korea.
So the information the FBI put out is convincing. You know, they paint a good picture.
Tom Brandl is with the network security firm DocuSign.
They basically have done their due diligence, and it appears, based on what they're telling me, that their assessment is accurate.
But Brandl and other security experts NPR interviewed are not 100% convinced that it must be the North Korean government. You can spoof an IP address, make it look like it's coming from a country it's not.
Because short of actually having your hands on a system or systems that were involved in a given cyber attack, there's no way to definitively conclude that a specific entity or individual is responsible.
Still, Brandl says, the FBI's investigation looks rigorous, and they've likely got even more evidence they can't publicly share. The FBI announcement does signal a shift. The U.S. is treating the attack against Sony as a matter of national security, not as a crime. This type of hack, breaking into a company, we have seen before. Udi Mokady with the security firm CyberArk says it happens to Fortune 500 companies every day.
That is the part of the, I would say, a regular advanced attack chain. Get through, search for credentials, and try to get privileged access in order to take controls of IT systems.
But the difference here is the scale of the damage and that it was political rather than financial. Hackers are usually after money, not shaming their target. In Sony's case, hackers embarrassed the company by making the stolen data public. And then public threats compelled Sony to pull its movie, The Interview, from theaters. President Obama today criticized Sony for caving.
Again, I'm sympathetic that Sony, as a private company, was worried about liabilities and this and that and the other. I wish they'd spoken to me first. I would have told them, do not get into a pattern in which you're intimidated by these kinds of criminal attacks.
The Department of Homeland Security issued a statement today urging CEOs of companies to take this opportunity to assess their own defenses. And Obama says he's going to work with Congress and other nations on coordinated responses to cyber attacks. Aarti Shahani, NPR News.
Around Hollywood, the action to withdraw the interview drew immediate rebuke as celebrities took to Twitter. Judd Apatow, the director and producer, said, "I think it is disgraceful that these theaters are not showing the interview. Will they pull any movie that gets an anonymous threat now?" The late night host Jimmy Kimmel agreed, calling it, quote, "an un-American act of cowardice that validates terrorist actions and sets a terrifying precedent." But as NPR's Nathan Rott reports, in writing rooms and comedy clubs in Los Angeles, the conversations are a little more nuanced.
All right, let's ignore the fact that the interview is said to be a dumb comedy made by two guys that typically make stoner movies. The conversations it's evoking are anything but.
I'm Rob Kuttner. I'm a writer for Conan.
My name is Stephanie Striegel. I'm an independent producer.
Kuttner also wrote for The Daily Show and Dennis Miller. Striegel has worked for Spyglass and New Line Cinemas and been in the industry for two decades. Both have followed the Sony story for weeks.
I feel like there's been like a schizophrenic range of reactions, because I feel like in the sort of public realm, like in social media, people are saying like this is an outrage and it's so stupid of Sony and it's so cowardly. And
no one censors us. We get to watch what we want, read what we want, produce what we want, you know, that whole First Amendment thing.
In private conversations, sort of in the calm of what would I do, there's a little bit more trepidation.
A little more, what if we did show the movie and something did actually happen? A bombing or a shooting.
Or no one comes. That could be the other thing.
Because they're scared of something happening. All this to say, it's a very complex situation, and it's one that Striegel worries could have a far-reaching effect on Hollywood.
From a creative point of view, if you're a producer or you're an actor, you're a writer, you know, it feels like the margin's narrowed about what kind of movies Hollywood will be making.
And it may not just affect Hollywood.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Flappers Comedy Club's Flappy Audition Show!
At Flappers Comedy Club in beautiful downtown Burbank, comedians like Greg Cashmanian are taking cracks at Kim Jong-un.
Part of me wants to believe that he's like a super big cinephile and was like, oh, they're doing a movie about me. Who's in it? James Franco. Oh, he's good. He's good. Who's killing me, though? Seth Rogen? No. I saw Neighbors. Zero sex appeal.
But it's not all laughs. David Reinitz is the owner of Flappers and a comedian himself, and he worries that these kind of jokes could provoke an attack on his business.
Gina, we're a little tiny company, mom and pop place, but we got a server, and you know, we've got a website, and we need that for our business. So there is a chill effect when you feel threatened.
And Reinitz says that's the scariest thing, because he says the world needs comedy.
Comedy helps open minds, and that's why they're scared of it. That's the real reason, oh, we're insulted. No, you're worried that your people are going to see this movie and realize how hysterical and ridiculous your tin pot dictator is and maybe try to take some action to change that system.
He just hopes that we don't have to change our system. After all, in the words of the incomparable Mel Brooks, humor is just another defense against the universe. Nathan Rott, NPR News.